Welcome to the latest episode of the Informing Choices mini-pod. The focus of many of the following episodes will be a collaborative effort with Future of Work Trend Intelligence and Business Insight Consultancy, Working the Future. The following episodes will see us diving into big waves reshaping how we work and what work means to us in this rapidly changing world. Think of it as your go-to guide for understanding the unstoppable march of technology with Industry 4.0, the complex dance of globalization and geopolitics, and why the way we all think about work is shifting beneath our feet. We'll be talking about the rise of on-demand working, how businesses are rebooting their operating frameworks to stay agile, and the urgent push for reskilling to keep up with the future. Plus, we'll be tackling the skim culture that's disrupting our attention, the push for truly inclusive workplaces, how businesses are fighting back against climate chaos, and what leadership looks like in the 21st century. And I'm delighted to be able to say that joining me as a partner in this really fascinating set of episodes is founding director of Working the Future, Kat Barnard. Kat, really great to be partnering with you on this. It's a critically important topic, isn't it?
Thanks, Steve. Yes, I think it is. Look, here we are in 2024 and coming up. Well, we've gone past, haven't we, the 4-year anniversary of the first pandemic lockdown. And I think it's not unfair to say that how we work is still in degrees of chaos, in part because of the long-term fallout of the pandemic, but also largely in part to as a result of a range of trends that were already in play long before the pandemic hit. And, you know, I don't think we can continue to limp forward in denial of those trends. So I think, you know, it's a brilliant idea that you've had that we would run these sessions to help educate and inform.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how easy it is for us to forget that there was a world of change before the pandemic. And there was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I guess If you pay attention to recent history, you know, there are actually multiple signs and signals indicating just how turbulent and destabilized economic parameters have become since the turn of the 21st century. But until we actually take a step back and pause for thought, it's really hard to see the water we're swimming in. So hopefully this series of mini pods will help listeners understand and better see and appreciate this new landscape.
And the jump off point for this is the fascinating report that that you and your colleague have put together. So let's start by introducing the Foresight Focus 2024 report that that you co-authored. How did that come about, and what is the report trying to say?
So we set up Working the Future in the very, very late 2016. And the reason for setting the business up was that we had separately from one another, my business partner, Pat, and I, we'd realised that there were these multiple trends in play. And when we started looking at some of the trend data more forensically, it started very much to appear that actually the long play out of those trends was going to make, and this is a British sociocultural reference, was going to make Brexit look like a bit of a tea party. Yeah. And we really couldn't believe that nobody was kind of ringing an alarm bell. So in the very, very first instance, what we had designed to do was to spin up a website where we would catalogue the trends that we saw as most impactfully driving change in the way that we work, so that we could start to evaluate the play out of those trends in quasi real time by analysing each kind of press release that happened and so on and so forth. obviously that was a pretty gargantuan task, because where we've ended up with Foresight Focus is that we track now 10 trends, but we are acutely aware every time we update our trend analysis that they're not the only trends that are playing out. They are simply, for us, the ones that are most dominant, most impactful, most garnering change, consciously or unconsciously. So for us, it was really an attempt to try and create some kind of comprehensible data gathering, while clearly those trends are very molten and nebulous and playing out in real time. And you know yourself as a futurist just how tricky that whole act and art can be.
And one of the things that also struck me about the report was when you see this collection of trends, individually, people would probably recognize them. But the value, I think, of this kind of exercise is helping people to remember that actually there are multiple trends, there are multiple layers within these trends, and very often they're connected as well. And when you see them presented in the way that you've done through the report, I think that starts to tease out some of those things. And it's critically important, isn't it, that enterprise or any organization going forward does have insight to these trends in that way to help them make informed choices, pun intended, about what they want to do about their futures.
Yeah, exactly that. I don't think it's an understatement. I mean, we've seen in the last couple of years certain vocabulary creep into public parlance, things like polycrisis, permacrisis. We seem to be in an ongoing state of chaos since the first lockdown, essentially, compounded by geopolitical tensions, war in Ukraine. Now we have war in the Middle East and so on. And I think, the human brain is only capable of processing so much information in any given minute and in any given day. And we filter out an awful lot of what isn't kind of cataclysmically urgent. And I think we've ended up in a state where we are just in a perpetual coping crisis now. And one of the trends that we track, which I know we'll talk about in one of the later episodes, is the known fact, what social scientists have discovered about the impact of smart devices and social media on our brains and on our attention spans. And I think, one of the key reasons why we wanted to bring this report into the public domain and use it as an educational piece for business leaders is to reinforce that what is known is then to a larger extent manageable. If we can raise awareness is the very first step of any change curve, but we say that in full knowledge that one of the trends that we're in fact tracking is this attention deficit. So it's this double-edged sword, isn't it, of these trends are there and we can compile the data that substantiates evidence of those trends, and that's the point at which we can start to take remedial action. I've always been a big believer that forearmed is forewarned. When we know what we need to know, we can act. If we don't know what we need to know, we are always going to be in a state of forced responsiveness, which doesn't drive the most adaptive behavior.
And for me, one of the other things, one of the other reasons I think it's critically important for leaders to kind of consider these kind of issues today is that in many organizations, the kind of default is to look internally rather than externally for solutions
yeah.
to problems that we might be envisaging, to kind of try and identify different ways perhaps of taking our products or services to market. It's a very inward looking decision-making process. And it's absolutely crucial, isn't it, that actually we understand the outside world, bring that insight back in so we can make sense of it in our operating context.
Yeah, absolutely. The sense-making piece is absolutely paramount. And, you know, if you look at executive education in the 21st century, the pinnacle of executive education has become the MBA. I'm not convinced that many, if any, courses are teaching trend intelligence in the way that they really ought to be. I'm also somewhat cynical of the notion that any academic educator could possibly have the contextual awareness to teach real world trend risk mitigation, because if you've not lived in a commercial operating environment, how can you possibly have experience with which to best take remedial mitigation action? So I think, you know, this piece about educating ourselves and doing whatever we can to get in front of, as best we can, the trends, because trends are quite simply a range of features that are playing out in real time, aren't they? They are, you know, the way in which cultures and societies slowly over time evolve and adapt. But there's plenty of evidence that we can use to get ahead of those trends, to put in place measures within our organisations that are optimally adaptive rather than its alternative, which is just accumulation of knee-jerk, unthought through, skin-deep reactionary measures.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Completely agree with what you said there. You said earlier on, and you know, rightly so, we're going to take a much deeper dive into a number of, well, into all of the meta trends, and we'll kind of dig down into some of the more detailed components of those through subsequent episodes. But can you take us through the 10 meta trends briefly that you've identified around the future of work, just so that we've got a flavour of the things that we're going to be talking about over the coming episodes? Because I think this is a really brilliant collection of meta trends. So, you know, take us through the 10, if you would, Kat.
Okay, so starting with technology, because technology is very rarely out of the news, we've looked at the medium long term impact of technology on organisations and how people in the workplace collaborate and share information. So we know that we've entered a phase of all digital, where increasingly workplaces are able to leverage digital tools, platforms, and technologies to harness efficiency. We will dive deeper into that one, but I think it's fair to say that in the 21st century, the impact of technology on business organisations cannot be underestimated. Closely linked with that, we picked globalisation. And interestingly, when we started this exercise in 2017, we were focused on globalisation and the impact that digital technology would have on the acceleration of globalisation. But obviously, since the pandemic, international relationships have deteriorated. So we've expanded the title now to globalization and geopolitics because of the very many frictions that are in play as we look at, you know, AI arms races and how technology is being used as a weapon in many instances. We look at the impact of you know, the weaponization of social media and interference in elections, both here in Europe and in the United States since 2016. So globalization, geopolitics is our second trend that we track. Then we look at changing attitudes to work, and that's really deep and intersected. But when I look at socio-cultural shifts, and perhaps because my background prior to setting up Working the Future was in emergent technology staffing, I can't help but think about the impact that tech has on consumer behavior over time. And for a range of reasons, which we will dive into, I think that modern workers have got very, very different attitudes towards work and employment that they would have had even as little as 15 years ago. And yet employers, for the main part, haven't even integrated any of those shifts and undercurrents. So that's the third one that we track. The next one on our radar is what we call next generation talent ecosystems, which is purely a reflection of the way in which the labour market has fragmented over the last decade, 15 years, such that there are now so many different ways in which to access talent. We're no longer in a world where you either employ someone on a permanent basis or a contract temporary basis. There's a whole range of other ways in which you can access talent to get work done. What are we on now? The fifth trend that we look at is the requirement to urgently redesign operating frameworks. Organizations have typically throughout the 20th century been organized in a way that puts power and control at the top of a hierarchy and at the center of an organization. But that is counterproductive when you need to be agile and market responsive. You need to be able to reallocate decision making and management to wherever those decisions need to be made in best service of your external stakeholders. So we look at things like decentralized organizing, distributed decision making, and so on in that area. Moving on, all of those things then underpin an increasingly urgent requirement to think about how we learn in the flow of work. So we spent the 20th century and probably, you know, the bulk of the 19th century thinking about education as being, you know, information that was acquired in an academic setting, and then you would go into the workplace, and if you were fortunate, you might get the occasional training budget allocated to your, you know, career progression, etc. But actually, the pace of external change now is mandating that we all need to be continuously learning in the flow of work. So how organizations think about learning requires a massive reboot and a massive rethink. Then, as I mentioned before, we've got this quite grave trend of attention disruption, where it's becoming increasingly hard to focus on work and agenda items that need deep consideration, because we're perennially distracted by screens and bleeps and interruptions and all of those things. So, you know, at the time, quite literally in humanity, where we need our wits about us most, and we need to be thinking critically, and we need to be really scrutinizing where we go next as a species, we've entered a stage where we're just beholden to whatever's just popped up on whatever social media platform we've got plumbed into our phone, which is disastrous, actually, because it's completely counterproductive. So that leaves three final trends that we track. One is the eighth trend that we track is what we call inclusive workplaces. Gosh, which is very, very broad, but effectively what we're looking at there is the range of diversities and how we create operating environments that encourage individuals with all their range of differences to come together and collaborate and share their perspectives and so on. Diversity of thinking is one of the most important things that any organization can uphold at the moment, because we need that broad plurality of perspective. And yet when you look at the data, you see that, you know, we're actually not, we think we're inclusive, but our organizations aren't designed for inclusivity at all. We don't even have age diversity in hand. We certainly don't have gender or cultural diversity in hand. So we've got a lot of work to do in that regard. Trend 9 is inescapable, the climate emergency, and what bearing resource depletion and increasingly extreme weather events will have on our ability to work, our ability to produce goods in a sustainable way. I'd argue there's a whole raft of organizations that are producing goods that are completely unsustainable from a planetary point of view. So there's a need for us all to deeply think about what constitutes value and how we create value in a future economy and marketplace where we cannot be as extractive and consumptive as we've been in the past. And then the final trend, Steve, is how all of those trends bear out on leadership. And what the, you know, we've got to have some really hard conversations about what the leadership attributes are that we value most in the future of work. And I would wager that they are not the leadership attributes that have helped us get to where we are today. I think there's a lot of very compelling evidence out there to show that vital skills, what others call soft skills, but those vital skills, emotional intelligence, self-awareness, awareness of others, those are absolutely pivotally important to how groups of people come together and are willing to be led by a trusted other. So I know that was a massive whistle-stop tour, and I'm always torn between, did I articulate myself coherently or did I just ramble through? But as you can see, there's a lot to go at there. And if we break them down episode by episode, I'm hopeful that listeners will get a more coherent picture of what's at play and what's at stake and where the opportunities are.
I mean, we've been talking about this this series of episodes on the podcast for quite a while. And each time we do that, I get more excited about the conversation that we're going to have. And the same things happened when you went through those meta trends. But I suppose the overarching thing that particularly struck me is that all of what you've spoken about there is a feature of increasing pace and scale of change that we have been seeing, but that seems to be accelerating. It's, you know, change used to be a constant, now it's exponential. And I think the idea that actually what we're looking for, and you ended talking about leadership there, what we're really looking for in leaders is a display of courage, because the temptation when things are changing rapidly around us is very often to fall back on the things that we're familiar with. But if you keep doing what you've always done, nowadays you don't get what you've always got. In actual fact, you stop being relevant. So it's crucially important that actually we have businesses that display courage and embrace some of these things you've been speaking about, to make the right kind of decisions for the future. And that's precisely what we're going to do through the following 10 episodes. Kat, thank you so much. I really think this is going to be a fascinating series of podcast episodes, and I can't wait to drill down into them. So thanks for this episode.
Thank you. I can't wait to get started either. So on to the next one.
On to the next one. So in this podcast episode, in the description, rather, you'll be able to see a link to the Working the Future website and how to contact Kat. In the meantime, thank you everyone for watching and listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a future episode of the podcast. And don't forget, tell your friends and colleagues about the Informing Choices mini pod, and we'll see you again on another episode very soon.